I'm a big fan of listening to the podcast on a lag, actually, because I keep hearing things and being like, man, that guy knows what he's talking about.
Interesting. I mostly go, stop talking, just stop talking. Just let Zach talk.
Oh, that's just not the point of the podcast.
No, I know, but like, I'm trying to like, a lot of the times, a good chunk of my edits in the podcast are just like me interrupting, not like interrupting, but like interjecting in one of your stories or just like tellings of something and saying something, oh, this is just like that, and it's not. And then I cut it out because it doesn't make any sense.
Huh. That is not, I would not say that that's my experience of the podcast, and I guess it is right re-remembered through the bit that I listen to, but we're not recording it. I'm going like, what? How is this related?
That's good. Hey, Zach.
Hey, Liz. So, I believe I've alluded to this a few times, but I have strong opinions on maps. I spent about 2 hours monologuing to myself last night to try and sort out all of my thoughts about maps. And so now I'm going to introduce to you what I call the More Map Manifesto. More maps. More. More maps, more. The More Maps Manifesto.
Jared, we are in for a treat, I guarantee it.
So this is a fascination for me that begins, I'm going to put it at February 2020, with the Milwaukee City Black-owned restaurants list to celebrate Black Heritage Month. The city of Milwaukee highlighted something, I'm going to say 16 restaurants in the Milwaukee area that are owned and operated by Black residents of Milwaukee. And like, that's cool. Very cool that the city is doing that thing. And I was interested and I saw them tweet about it, and they tweeted out this list of places, some 16 places around the city. And I thought that, wow, that's so cool. I would like to go check out those places. And then I looked at the list of places and I went, but which one is nearest to me? At this point in time, I was also taking a class in GIS. GIS is Geographic Information Systems. It's this whole subdomain of information management and information science, and also programming, and you need all the server stuff to make it work, and you need the satellites to make the map tiles look right, and you need cartographers to make sure that the streets line up and everything. So there's a lot of stuff to the world of GIS, but I was just taking this introduction to GIS course. And that was for urban planning reasons. GIS is all about taking information and mapping it to a geographic system. So one example that I've been thinking about is fire hydrants in the city. That you could have just a database of every single fire hydrant you've got in the city, and when they were last flushed, and what cross street they're on, and I don't know, what year they were installed, what model they are. Fun fact, Milwaukee had our own model of fire hydrant for a number of years in the 1800s and 1900s. We had there was like the Milwaukee model fire hydrant. There's not anymore. We just get regular fire hydrants, but maybe you want to know what model it is, whatever information could be important about a fire hydrant. I couldn't tell you what all those are. And so that database would be pretty useful, but it would be even more useful if you took all of the information about these fire hydrants scattered throughout the city and put that onto a map. If you displayed it in a way that you could see what the density of those looks like. If I take every fire hydrant and put a little GPS pin on a map and draw a 200 meter circle, because that's as long as the hoses on our fire engines, we want to know where those can reach. Mm-hmm. Whatever. Or maybe I want to know when they were last flushed. I want to look at, for all of the fire hydrants in these 10 blocks that haven't been flushed in the last while, we need to send a team out to go reflush them. And so we're going to generate this list from the geographical information that we've got and turn that into something that can be used. A lot of this is coming from a very like Edward Tuftian kind of thought, the visual display of important information is like a really big concept. People spend their whole lives figuring out how to do it right, because the applicability of data and the usefulness of data is limited by how well you are able to convey it. You could have all the data in the world, and unless you can take that data and turn it into an accurate picture that conveys the thing that you want another person to understand, it's not useful data. And so taking the transition from this is just a database of fire hydrants to this is a map of fire hydrants kicks it up a notch in terms of how much useful information is there and what kind of things can I do with it. If you can drag and select on the map, that's a lot more intuitive than trying to write a SQL query that uses the GPS coordinates, whatever.
Right. There's not like more data on that map at, you know, at the, in the present. If you just put pins where the GPS coordinates in the database are, that's mm-hmm. not like more information, but it is better presented and therefore more useful.
Right. And another useful thing about GIS is that you can take the data that you have put onto a map and then merge that with other data that also goes onto a map, as long as they're both using the same system of mapping, or you can convert from one to the other. You could say something like, let's make sure that every house that has more than 5 residents has a fire hydrant within 100 meters of it. And that could be, you take this data, you take that data, you put them together and turn that into something even more useful, because you're able to take these two concepts of population per household and where the fire hydrants are, and through this layer of GIS, turn that into a decision you can make. You can say, oh, okay, we need to order 500 more fire hydrants to be placed in these locations to ensure that all of the houses that match our criteria are fully covered. So I'm taking this GIS class, and the idea with introduction to GIS, at least, is there are a lot of things that you think about every day that belong on a map, or that somebody has made a decision about by looking at a map or by using a map. We've got some city-funded grocery stores, not that the city runs and manages the grocery store, but that the city, I think, gave some preferential treatment to grocery stores going in locations where there were not already grocery stores within a particular range, to reduce the food deserts in our areas. And that was able to happen because we had information. We took that information, put it onto a map, and then we could just look and say, okay, where are the places where there are fewer grocery stores, or where it takes more than n number of minutes to get to a grocery store. So it's February 2020. I'm thinking about GIS. I'm probably postponing my GIS homework, and I'm scrolling on Twitter, and I see this list from Milwaukee of Black-owned restaurants. And it's just a list. It just says, you know, whatever, Heaven's Table, 2020 North Avenue. I don't know, 15 others. I don't remember what they all were called. But it was the name of the place, a phone number and an address all put onto just a list in a PNG that then got attached to this tweet. And I looked at that, and my question was, okay, which one can I go to? If I want to go to one today, which one is that feasible for? And partially just because the way that I think about restaurants is very spatially, and partially because I was in this GIS class, I thought it would be really great if I could look at all of these on a map to make this determination. And so what I ended up doing at first was I opened up 16 tabs of all of the different places and compared them and looked at, okay, this one's kind of over here and this one's kind of over here. And then I thought, someone else probably is going to be wondering the same thing. And so if I have already done all of this information gathering, then I can just go publish that somehow. And the easiest way that I had to publish it was Google Maps has a list feature. You can create a custom list in Google Maps and share that. And so that's what I did. I went into Google Maps. I found all of the locations. I added them to this custom list. Some of the locations had not yet been updated in Google Maps. And so I said, hey, I found the company's website. This is their actual verified address. So put this address now has this company at it. And here's the website for this company. You can go in and tell Google that they have the wrong information. And after doing all of that, I put all of the information together into a list. I hit the share button and then I replied to the city's tweet. And I said, by the way, if anybody wants a map of all of this stuff, here's a map of all of this stuff. And that began this journey of like, there need to be more maps more. Because now that I had that map, I was able to look at what was nearest to me, what was nearest to a transit line to me, because this is all just a layer that goes on top of the existing Google Maps that we've got. So I can look at where I am relative to all of this. I can turn this information about this building is on National Avenue, this business is on whatever, into relative information to me. I can say, where is this? A mile away? Is it north? Is it directly on a transit line? That kind of thing is a lot easier to work out with a map. Something very cool about digital maps is you can share one big digital map that encompasses the whole of Milwaukee, and then someone can choose to zoom in on the building that is nearest to them and have the actual information about at the street level, what does this look like? And so it covers the where is this relative to me large scale and what is this like? How do I get there? All of that kind of thing. I don't think anybody looked at that list. That tweet got no engagement. Cool. So I have to assume that nobody actually looked at the little map list that I made. But since then, I have been thinking about the ways that things in my life would be more helpful if they were maps or if they were on a map. Sometimes I will go onto a restaurant's website and they will have their address, and sometimes they will have their address and a little map. And if it's a Google map, it'll say, it will be the map image, a little pin for this particular restaurant, and then pins for other points of interest. There's a park nearby. Here's the like main shopping center downtown. And so this is positioned relative to all of those things now in my mind, because I'm looking at not just an address, but at a map. And sometimes restaurants don't do that. And I've got to go and figure out, okay, where actually is this located? There's a news source, Urban Milwaukee, that publishes a lot of news about Milwaukee. And a lot of the stuff that they publish is about restaurants or businesses or whatever. And a lot of times they will say, this place is now opening up on whatever avenue. And I go, okay, well, cool. I don't know if that is 10 feet from me. It's probably not 10 feet from me. I know the names of the streets near me, but I have no sense of where that is, how I would get there. And so then how relevant this story is to me, because if it's out on the other side of Milwaukee, I'm probably never going to like take the jaunt over just to have a different kind of burger. But if it's a new burger place downtown, I might have an occasion to go there. This is a thought that I'm having. Apparently those 2 hours weren't enough. Now I'm having thoughts. So another news source near in the Milwaukee area will do, I think maybe this is Urban Milwaukee, and I've been talking about On Milwaukee this whole time. Whatever. News source near me does political reporting, and when they do their political reporting, at the bottom they have a little blurb that says, this person that we mentioned in the story gave this much money to this campaign, and this person gave this much money to this campaign, because it's all public information that they can just grab and pull and have there, so you can see, oh, okay, this guy was the one expert consulted about this, and he's got a pretty strong opinion because you can see he gave this much money to this campaign. In a similar way, if you're just going to put three different addresses, they used to be at this location, and now they're going to be at this location, and the restaurant group also owns this restaurant at this location. To be able to put all of those on a map blurb at the end would be very useful, would help me as the reader. It would be taking the data that you've already got and formatting it in a way that it's easier for me to parse it into something that's useful. I'm going to keep on coming back to that because that's what the whole point is in my brain, is that at some point you need to take a bunch of information and turn it into a thought in someone else's head. And it's easier for me to look at this and turn it into, oh, I should go there, if I can look at a map, than if I'm not. Now I'm just going to list other things that should be maps. So I did a project. Here's a couple success stories. I did a project for this GIS class where I had seen a lot of images of old postcards of places in Milwaukee and gone, oh, that's cool, I wonder where that actually is, or seen, oh, this is on the crossroads of Locust and Newberry. Those don't cross. That's not a crossroad. Whatever, Locust and Lake. And done the work to figure out, oh, okay, where are those two streets? Where do they cross? Right here. Okay, so I can actually now imagine this postcard superimposed over the place that I have seen in real life, in a way that to me is a lot cooler than just seeing like, oh, this is a postcard of old Milwaukee, but like, this is a postcard of a place that I have been that now looks very different. And then using that, I was able to like pinpoint, here's the spot that this is. And actually, if I just go on Google Maps and like turn the street view to that direction, I can take the same shot. I can figure out what does this look like. And so I took some number of postcards from the Milwaukee archives and mapped those out so that I could look at them and go, oh, okay, here's what this area used to look like, and here's what this area used to look like. Some places have really changed a lot. Some of them actually, through the postcards, I was able to see this park used to look like this, and then they started building this, and then they turned the railroad into a highway, and so now this memorial looks different. I just thought it was so cool, and it was so much more meaningful to me because it happened in a space, in a two-dimensional space on this map. There's Open Benches, which is a web project by a guy that I follow on Twitter, and you just go on and you say, here's a bench that I found, and here's the plaque of this bench, and here's what the view from this bench looks like, and they just host it, whatever, and build up this map of all of the plaques on benches.
Cool.
Yeah, which is really neat and really sweet, and there are some stories of people looking up family members, just Googling them, and seeing like, oh, okay, there's a bench dedicated to her here.
That's really sweet. I like that.
Yeah. So it's this really neat idea, and it is made so much more useful and visually interesting, because it is presented as a map. If it were just a list of, on the northeast end of Lake Park, there's a bench that says this, it would be a lot less engaging.
Right.
than being able to poke and prod and zoom around a map and see what the benches in your area look like or say or whatever. Now for some not-success stories, for some more times that I have been thinking this thing could stand to be a map. My boss a while ago raised that he would be really interested in something like a travel recommendation site that was edited by users. And there is, like, Wiki Travel is a website that exists, and the thing that he described was so much more like a map. It was so much more based on this layer of points of interest that goes on top of an existing map. You say you show up in Milwaukee and you want to go to a park. Where are the parks that you should check out as a person who lives in Milwaukee? I can give you advice on these three. I'm thinking about like Atlas Obscura does something similar to that, where you can see a map of cool places in an area and you can see a list of those things. There's a news source that is doing 52 different restaurants, a different restaurant for every week this year. And they're highlighting them, and I don't know where any of them are. And it would be really cool to have a single list of, here's, we're up to week, whatever, 17. Here's the 17 first ones, the little first sentence of it, and here they are on a map. So you can check out what are the restaurants that we're talking about. Think about how you would get to them. As I was monologuing yesterday, I realized that a lot of the things that I think about very spatially are restaurants. And I think that's a byproduct of not living a super car-dependent lifestyle. And also just most of the time, restaurants, I want to be a thing that happens on a whim more than like going to the grocery store. I want to be able to be in an area and go, oh yeah, I remember hearing about a restaurant two blocks down.
Right, yeah.
That's a good feeling.
Yeah, and I think, Zach, I was telling you in the pre-show that recently I went out to lunch twice in 1 week and with some non-Madison residents, and they were like, where should we go to lunch? And producer Quinn and I were like, don't know. Don't really know. Not our strong suit is knowing, you know, like what places around where we live are good to eat. And like, if I had a list of 52 awesome restaurants and I could see like, hey, that one's kind of near, let's check it out.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be kind of interesting.
Yeah. So I think the thing that I'm most interested in is not just having points on a map, right? I can go on Google and find all of the restaurants in my area, but the ability to editorialize about a map, to say,
right,
we have selected 16 restaurants that we're going to highlight this February. We have selected 52 that we're going to highlight this year.
Mm-hmm.
Or here is a point and here is some extra information about it. Here is this point and here's what it looked like 100 years ago. As we know, through this postcard.
Right.
Or another one, the Democratic Socialists of America group near me is planning a bike ride. And if you go online, you will see a text description of the bike ride that we're going to take. And they say, we're going to start in Gordon Park. And I went, okay, I need to look up where Gordon Park is. So these are all things that I think could be made more useful with the ability to quickly editorialize a map. Either add information about a point or select a list of existing points. And that's just, I look in the world and I see these are things that should be maps. So what do we do about it? Or Liz, do you have any other things in your life that you've been going, ah, this should be a map? Because I would love to hear it, because I only exist within my own consciousness. And I love to hear what happens in other people's brains.
A lot of my hesitation right now is from like, just like not navigating very much. I very infrequently am the one that like is getting me to point A, from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say frequently? I meant infrequently. I very rarely do that, and so I suppose, like, practically, like, knowing where something is in relation to, like, where I am is more a curiosity or like just kind of interesting than like actually some information that I'm going to be using.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure there is stuff in my life, because I am genuine in particular about the postcards. I was genuinely really interested in like seeing what particular things looked like 100 years ago. That sounds super interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's still up. So if I can find it, I will share it. It'll be in the show notes.
Sounds good. And I would love something like that for Madison, right? So, you mm-hmm. know, somewhere I've been, roads I've walked down 100 times, but 100 years ago would be so interesting.
Yeah.
But I don't have anything in particular off the top of my head.
The more I'm thinking about this, the angle of it from editorialized, the more I'm thinking about the way that this is a problem that has been solved only for certain domains, right? There is this whole world of GIS and geographic information management. If you want to manage infrastructure, if you want to think about planning a city, that there are data sets of all of the bike lanes in the entire US or census population tracts or whatever you want. So there's these realms where there is, where GIS and where mapping is standard.
Mm-hmm.
People understand what the tools are. The tools are made for those purposes and they're in common use. So there is already information about whatever the thing is. The population is a really good example that a lot of times to figure something out, one of the factors you use is the population data. But in editorial contexts like newspaper or city restaurant recommendations, or we're just a group trying to organize a bike ride, the tools and the norms aren't there for, oh, when I'm doing this kind of thing, I'm going to put it on a map. I'm going to think about it in a map, and I'm going to let other people think about it in a map. So there's two elements to fixing that then. One is the tools and one is the norms. The norms comes in with just like, make more maps. I make more maps. You make more maps. It's the More Maps Manifesto. That's how it goes. But tools is the place that's interesting because I think the better the tools are, the more the making more maps is feasible, is possible. And so once you've got the tools, then the making the maps is easier. So one tool that I have mentioned already is the Google custom maps thing that you can go on Google, you can select points, you can say, make this a list, you can take that list and share it, and other people can then go on Google Maps list and look at your list. Or I think they even could like take your list and add it to their own map. And knowing Google, the maps list functionality has already been moved from like Maps to Google Trips to like Google Plus back to Maps because those other things were closed. And so I don't have a lot of confidence that Google will keep Google Maps lists around forever.
Right.
And just like conceptually, it would be great to be able to have a more open way to create lists of places on a map. So one thing that you can use there is OpenStreetMap data, OpenStreetMap, which is just a open, collaboratively edited cartography system. You can use it to get data about places. I think it does some geocoding, which is this whole world of taking information about a location and turning that into a GPS latitude and longitude coordinates. So like an address and turning that into coordinates, or a zip code and turning that into a shape. And so whatever it is that gets made, you could rely on OpenStreetMap data. Mm-hmm. But then, like, how do you actually make the tool that allows whatever, the folks from the local news organization to go in and pop three places on a map, or for the city to go in and pop 16 places on a map and then share that in a way that somebody else can click on that link, open it up, and review it? And that's an interesting question, and that's what I would like to now solve collaboratively.
I think if I were Google, probably I would just stick all of the data for the list in the GET request.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how Google that does things, it seems.
Yeah.
Knowing that, like, everyone's just going to use a URL shortener or something of that sort anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Embed or whatever it's going to be.
Right. Yeah. So that was my initial thought, is that storage is hard. And so if you need to store something, that becomes a much more complicated problem if you can make this map list that just gets created on the fly every time you load a URL based on the URL in question. That would be cool. You could take, like, there's a whole JSON format, GeoJSON, for putting points of interest on locations. You could take that JSON, you could turn it into a minified form. You could encode that as base64, and you could set that as the URL query. Mm-hmm. And then you could take the URL query, parse it out, base64 into JSON, into GeoJSON, and put that on the map. And that's pretty cool. That's not a bad idea. It limits your ability to edit.
Mm-hmm.
That I couldn't make a list and then go back and go, oh, wait, actually, I put this one street down, or I put it at 2020 and it was supposed to be at 2002. So maybe we want to be able to make people be able to make editorial maps and put them somewhere. And then you get into the whole problem of where do they get put?
Mm-hmm.
And you could make them store their own data. I think GeoJSON, like the primary GeoJSON editor, if you want to save and share something, you save it to your own GitHub account, and then you give them an ID, and then they authenticate against your GitHub account. And use the ID to get the file from your GitHub account and then share that back to the user trying to access the thing that you shared.
Okay.
So that's the place where they're storing the JSON.
That's not terribly accessible.
Right.
But it is cool.
Yeah.
I'll admit.
Another thing that you could do is you could do a freemium thing and say, you pay us some money and we store it, and you don't pay us some money and we just export a ping of it. We just find the bounding box of all of the points that you've added, or all of the lines that you've added, and we export a ping. Or you can pay us some money, we store, based on your account, all of the JSON data for the thing, and then we can redisplay it to people. But, like, I'm open. What are some wacky zany ideas? How do we give people the tools to make more maps?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Zach, there's this technology, it's called the blockchain.
Oh. You don't pay me, you pay an intermediary. And
yeah.
The intermediary just, like, kills a couple puppies and then uses that energy that the puppies release to store your data.
So there's an option, I suppose.
Uh-huh.
Another one would be like, and this would work better for, say, like a newspaper or the city of Milwaukee than like some rando on Twitter. But like, if it could just be like an integration for popular CMSs.
That's very clever. That's really smart. I forgot that CMSs exist.
And Jared, just so you know what I'm talking about, the way that like a lot of article-based websites work behind the scenes is that there's like an interface that you sort of manages. Well, it stands for content management system, and it manages your content, but in particular it puts it does all the difficult parts of like assigning like a URL to this particular article. It makes a new page, it does all the formatting that needs to be done, it, you know, puts the branding where it needs to go, and part of it is like it stores images and stuff that it can reference in those articles, and it could do a similar thing, you know, technically speaking, it could do a similar thing with a JSON list of addresses or whatever it is, and that would be just as editable as an image or another piece of text. And then all you need is a tool to generate that JSON, which could also be built into the CMS.
Right. I like that. I like that a lot. And so another thing that integrates with the CMS that would make sense to integrate with the CMS is, so I made the list of all of the Black-owned restaurants that they were promoting in the Milwaukee area, and I shared it, and then it just stayed on my Google Maps. I made it on my Google Maps account, and so it just stayed. It popped up every time I opened up Google Maps. Here are 16 points of interest that you have saved. And they're the restaurants. And so every time I opened up Google Maps, wherever I was, I would see restaurants near me, and highlighted in blue would be the 16 restaurants that I had gone through the work of saving in a particular way. And so how do I make that something that can be replicated? How do I make it so that whatever, on Milwaukee, can say, here are our 52 restaurants, and every week we're going to publish a restaurant, and that will pop up in my Maps application and say, here's a restaurant. And I think the answer is an RSS feed.
Right, yeah.
There needs to be some way to import someone else's list and display it all. And so that's just some app that can do maps and also can import map information as it is shared. The same way that, like, you can go on calendars and subscribe to published calendars in various formats, I think also through RSS, if I had to take a wild guess.
Yeah, probably. It's a versatile protocol.
Incredible. So maybe that's what I do. I make the location RSS reader.
That'd be pretty cool. I think that could get a lot of use. Because, like, I don't know. Maybe it would be difficult to, like, monetize that in the way that a newspaper or magazine would want. But, like, having an app where you subscribe to whatever this list, and they're gonna say, here's the restaurant we reviewed, and this is, and it just kind of appears on your map, and here's the review from the place. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. That could be the like Substack right now. A lot of places you can get their articles, but if you want the podcast, you've got to pay them. You get a separate RSS feed that you only get if you pay them. And so On Milwaukee could just have, if you pay us, you get the RSS feed, and if not, you get this No Maps For You feed.
But I like that sort of curation, that kind of passive. I'm thinking about, like, I follow an Instagram account that reviews books.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever she gives a book 5 stars, I add it to my Goodreads because I want to read it. Sometimes I don't even look at the actual review. I just look at the stars and I'm like, yeah, I want to put that on my list. So
yeah,
like a similar thing for restaurants that isn't like annoying.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Like you don't have to get all up in my face about it. You could just,
right.
Just be
let
in
me
this
come
little
to
app.
You.
Yeah.
So that's the More Maps manifesto. More maps, more tools, more maps, more often.
Awesome. I like it. It has made me think about maps differently, but not quite maps differently, but displaying certain types of data differently, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me because I never really questioned something. I wouldn't have thought before today. If I read that 16, sorry, I'm going to start this thought over.
Uh-huh.
If I saw that like 52 restaurants in Milwaukee article, one, I probably wouldn't look at it because I don't live in Milwaukee, but I certainly wouldn't have thought, oh, I wish this was on a map, but now I do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of cool. Changed my thinking a little bit.
Yeah. I think there are ways that we can communicate that we haven't figured out yet as a species. And maps are one of those that we like are could just be on the verge of. I am not a map prophecist, and I don't believe there is a map utopia we are approaching. But I hope that I can look into the future and see a world of better maps.
Yeah.
And maybe it'll come to fruition.
I'm thinking about like a browser extension maybe that
mm-hmm.
grabs addresses and then like makes a little iframe of the Google map below it.
Ooh.
That's what I have to contribute.
I like it. Get to the end of the P tag. You'd need a very semantic website to put that into, which is counter to the entire modern web.
See, a couple episodes ago when I had my manifesto.
Beep, beep, beep.
I didn't even talk about browser extensions. That wasn't in my manifesto at all.
No.
But like, I mean, generally it talked about accessibility, but like tools surrounding websites.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to make those useful tools.
It sounds like you're steadily becoming disillusioned with the capitalist project of strict hierarchies and putting things behind paywalls, declaring private property, that kind of thing, that is not contributing to making a better world. Maybe a better world is possible, and it doesn't come through strict notions of private property and ownership.
Yeah, and but those things tend to push people towards things like piracy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, speaking of piracy,
yeah,
there's this show I've been watching. I'm not quite all the way through season one yet, but I'm really, really enjoying it. It's Our Flag Means Death. It's very funny. It's very queer. And I'm just having a really good time with it. I wanted to talk about it a little bit. Zach, have you seen it?
I have not seen it. I've seen a lot of discourse about it, though.
Discourse in a bad way?
No. Just okay. Like, hey, check this out for this reason. Hey, check this out for that reason. Okay. There have been a lot of different reasons that people have told me that it's a thing I might be interested in.
Some things that might entice someone to watch it. Like I said, it's very funny. Taika Waititi is probably the perfect actor for this role. I couldn't imagine this being done without without him in that role. It's so perfect. It's so good. It has a lot of heart. And when I finish an episode, I simultaneously feel satisfied and want more.
All right.
I've been watching it on HBO Max, and there's plenty of queer aspects. And by queer aspects, I mean, like, there are gay characters, and they're gay not for laughs, but because they're just people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're funny.
Good. Good combo. Yeah. Really, really breaks my immersion when the queer characters are not funny.
It's a show about pirates. I don't know. I don't know how much to say about it without. There's not like. It's a comedy. I'm not going to spoil it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, there is a story, and it's a good story so far.
All right. I will have to go check it out. And now, a PSA from the Worrying Bugs. It's grape prophecy time. This has been a PSA from the Worrying Bugs.
Jared, if you think that you can think of someone who would be better than Taika Waititi in his role in Our Flag Means Death,
or if RSS is your backbone, you can reach out and tell me about it on Twitter. I'm at